The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Today on the podcast, we will talk about Ben Sasse, who decided to come out and talk a little bit about how uncomfortable he is with both parties' visions for the future.
He's a traitor.
He's a traitor.
Okay. I don't know anything about the story at this point. I'm outraged. I have to tweet about it. Hashtag Sasse is sassy.
Would you spell it both the same way?
Exactly the same way.
Okay. We also have a really personal story Glenn got into, and you can listen to it on the podcast here. I would also encourage you to go listen to the podcast that came out this weekend. If you're a subscriber here, you already may have seen it pop up on your feed. It's an interview, a lengthy one, with Glenn and Tim Ballard. And in there, he kind of goes really into depth on what happened to his family. And I don't know why I'm talking like you're not here. You're sitting right here. But that is it's not an easy thing to relive, is it?
No, it was an awful hour. On radio, it was an absolute awful hour. I mean, you would get something out of it, but I hated it. I haven't been that uncomfortable. My mouth was dry the whole hour.
Yeah, really, really rough to relive. That's in this podcast that you're listening to now, so that'll come up in a little bit. And it's uncomfortable, but it's something you probably need to hear, especially if you have kids. And an amazing story about immigrants. It's amazing to see how this story has been spun. Remember the whole separating the kids on the border? Well, we have some updates to that. And it kind of explains a little bit what's actually going on and why these things stretched out longer than we expected.
But we would prefer that you don't pay any attention to that. Otherwise, we'll have to talk about the real issue on the border. And we prefer just to say, Trump is bad!
Thankfully, you also remind me when you say that of Serena Williams, who instead of dealing with the issue that she was actually admittedly cheating, at least her coach admitted it, and along with her yelling at the umpire the entire time, it was all sexism. She says it was all sexism, and that's why
she's a good example for her kids. She never ever cheats. Again, even though the coach said he was giving signals, which is exactly what the referee said.
Yeah.
I propose an easy solution and what should happen in the real world, and then we show you what actually happens.
It's all coming up on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Monday, September 10th. Glenn Beck.
If someone were to ask you, why do you vote Republican? What would your answer be? Would it be, well, anything's better than whomever the Democrats are rolling out? Or would it be more like, because I'm an alpha and you're a beta? Roar! If you're a Democrat listening to the show, first, I want to congratulate you. You're the one. Congratulations. I also want to extend the same question to you. Why do you vote Democrat? Is it purely because of opposition? Is it because you believe in identity politics? Or is it that you believe in socialism? There's a difference between, I think the government should be a little bigger and we should do more in welfare, and socialism. And we're seeing that now, that split. Or maybe on both sides, there are a lot of people who the tide has come in and it's rolling and you kind of feel stuck. I don't know where to go. The reason I ask is because of all of the identifiers have just attached to both parties, and they appear to be the long-term agendas for each of them. The GOP is turning into an opposition party, both to the Democrats and the media, and their principles are being boiled down to loyalty to whomever they have in office or they want you to vote for. Likewise, Democrats are a party of opposition to all things GOP, and they're hurtling towards cultural division and democratic socialism. I think I can find the long-term vision for the Democrats, and that is actual democratic socialism, which has nothing to do with constitutionalism. I don't know what the long-term strategy is of the Republicans. What does the party stand for? On Saturday, Senator Ben Sasse tweeted that he regularly considers dropping the GOP and going independent. Oh, my gosh, did that anger the right. What a beta! He should support the president. Wait, he was just saying, I think I should be independent because I don't know what anybody stands for. On Sunday, Senator Sasse went on Jake Tapper to explain himself. Now listen.
Frankly, neither of these parties have a long-term vision for the future of the country. You know, 10 years from now, where are we going to be in the future of work when young people are disrupted out of jobs three times a decade? Future of war and cyber, the collapse of community. Like, there's massive stuff happening in America, and these parties are really pretty content to do 24-hour news cycles screaming at each other. The main thing that the Democrats are for is being anti-Republican and anti-Trump, and the main thing Republicans are for is being anti-Democrat and anti-CNN, and neither of these things are really worth getting out of bed in the morning for. I think we should be talking about where the country's going to be in 10 years. So I've been saying for a long time that these parties need to reform and have a future-focused vision, and we're not there yet.
Did Ben Sasse just become my spirit animal? Because I think he did. In one paragraph, he mentioned job disruption from technology, the future of war and cyber war, civil unrest, and how the media is feeding off of our outrage. And he is absolutely right. We all have to take a step back and look at what we're actually talking about, because 99% of it is nonsense. I had a conversation with my kids last night at the dinner table. One of my kids said, because we were going over the Constitution. Yes, I'm that kind of dad. We were going over the Constitution, and I said, okay, kids, tell me how you can impeach, what it means, and how that works. And they talked about it, and one of my older kids said, do you really think that Donald Trump is going to be impeached? And I said, yeah, I do. If the Democrats win the House, yes, not removed from office, but impeached. My daughter said, very astutely, on what charge? Now, she's not a fan of Donald Trump, but she said, on what charge? And I said, exactly. No charge. Just because they've got to do it. They've got to do it. I think, personally, it is refreshing to have somebody have the balls to actually step up and go, you know, there's bigger fish to fry here. We're in really big trouble. The next 10 years is going to change everything. Some are already here. Some will be on their way very soon. But no one in Washington is concerned about doing anything about the trouble, the real trouble that we face. They have no plan. All they care about is harnessing your anger due to their screw-ups over the last few decades. Think about that. They want us to be angry over the things that they have done in order to give them, Republicans and Democrats, more power. Meanwhile, nothing ever changes. Nothing gets better because no one's actually talking about what we're truly facing. Senator Sasse is right. The system was never meant to just be a two-party system. In fact, our founders warned against this. How many more senators and congressmen feel like Ben Sasse? I'm not sure. It might just be him and Mike Lee, I'm thinking maybe. Step out of the shadows, guys, together. Start something new, something based off of principles and values, and those values and principles are the thing that brought us together in the first place. And I don't mean the Republicans or the Democrats. I mean Americans, people from all over the world. They all came together because of the Bill of Rights and the ideas that were outlined in the Declaration of Independence. People believed that. I still do. But we haven't done that in a long time. The Republican Party was founded in 1854. 6 years later, they held the White House. It can happen again. We just need brave men and women to stand up and say, okay, enough is enough. None of you are actually serious.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
I want to talk to you a little bit about understanding the world. And this is really what we get into in the book, and we'll get into on the stage show. I'm coming to a town near you. Look it up at glenbeck.com/tour. But in my book, Addicted to Outrage, which comes out next week, I'm trying to help you make sense of the world. How what is happening to us? And then chart a path out. And the reason why we're having problems is because after World War I and World War II, Ayn Rand really became a big thing. And she was just all about reason. I mean, I think it was Anthem. The last thing the temple said was reason. And, you know, a lot of people said, well, she's cutting out God. Yeah, okay, well, let's just focus on reason here for a second, because we've now, as a society, cut out God, and we've now cut out reason. This is, it's reason that saves us from massacres, always. Now, so reason swung really hard back the other way because of fascism and communism back in the 50s. And we started going, yeah, we really need to, you know, fix reason firmly in her seat. Then in the late 1960s and 70s, campuses turned into the postmodernist, I don't know, idea factory or indoctrination camp. And postmodernism only means the modern world, which was the Enlightenment, anything created by the Enlightenment, anything that, you know, happened, you know, here in our country with the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, anything that really cemented reason is the enemy, because we are now in the postmodern world, which rejects all of that. Okay, so in 1958, Rand stated, reality exists as an objective absolute. Facts are facts, independent of man's feelings, wishes, hopes, or fears, right? That's the world that I understand. But that is not the world that we're living in. Postmodernism holds there is no objective natural reality, and logic and reason are mere conceptual constructs that are not universally valid. Now, the idea that human nature doesn't exist is a problem. The idea there are no objective moral values, one's concept of good and another's concept of evil are to be equally correct, I'm quoting, since both good and evil are merely subjective. That's not true. That is not true. But this is what's causing the wires to short circuit in people's heads. That's why Linda Sarsour, we all know what the Nazis did to the Jews. Bad, right? What did the Nazis do? They dehumanized the Jews, then they rounded up, they killed them, right? And it was subjective. The truth was subjective. There was no real truth back with the Nazis. Because the real truth is, wait a minute, killing the Jews, bad. Why? They're humans. Every man has a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if all truth is subjective, I can do whatever I want. Linda Sarsour came out recently, and she said, she not only spoke against the Jews, she spoke against people who were, quote, humanizing the Jews. That's one of the most incredible statements I've heard since Goebbels. We cannot humanize the Jews, Linda Sarsour. What? Now, so you know, she's the leader of the women's movement, the Women's March. She is also, hand in hand with the Democratic Party. The Democrats have to decide, is this who you want to stand with? And I don't mean the Democrats in Washington. I mean you, if you're a Democrat. You need to decide. Now, how can she say that? However, at the same time, they claim I'm an anti-Semite. They led this big campaign. George Soros funded a big campaign that I was an anti-Semite while I was doing a rally in Jerusalem standing for Israel and the Jews. But I was an anti-Semite, but she's not an anti-Semite? How is that possible? Because she is doing what the postmodern world needs, and she is effecting the disillusion, the disillusionment and the dissolving of the Western world. She's tearing the system down while I am holding the system up. And that's all that matters. It's the same with GLAAD. GLAAD says they want to protect homosexuals. I meet with GLAAD and I say, okay, we're never going to agree on the wedding cake, but let's agree throwing homosexuals off the rooftops or going and getting them in the middle of the night like Russia is doing or Iran is doing. We should stand together on that. No. Why? Because the goal is not about homosexuals. The goal is about the destruction of the Western way of life. The wedding cake is more important than the Jews being thrown off the roofs in Iran. That's the problem. And this is what your kids are learning right now on college campuses. Think about that the next time you're writing a check for a college loan. One of the greatest errors that we have made in the conservative movement is to accept the notion that reason and God are somehow or another at odds, the opposite ends of the spectrum. That is not true. If there is a God, he's got to be the greatest scientist of all time. He is a mathematician. This incorrect notion doesn't stand to a simple test of logic. Mankind, uniquely among the creatures of the earth, possesses free will, self-awareness, and the capacity for what? For reason. We have brains that are the only ones that hold the concept of me, myself, and you, yourself. That's called identity. And as brilliant and as beautiful as whales and dolphins are, or any of the great apes, and I mean that sincerely, we don't have evidence that they possess these concepts, nor do their brains possess the same physical and chemical structures where these things exist within our consciousness in theirs. It doesn't happen that we know of. That's what makes us man. Reason. Now think this through. God creates all these creatures, but only one of them possesses really free will, self-awareness, and reason. Now what God or creator wants us to ignore reason, not use logic, and accept even his existence on blind faith, not the God that I know of, doesn't compute. It's the postmodernists who rely on the acceptance of blind faith. There is zero empirical data that any portion of postmodern ideology works in reality or is even real. The only thing that postmodernism does, and this is the root of the problem in our society right now, what is being spoon-fed to us, 181 genders, well, there's probably more than that. Of course there are. Because there is no reality. There is no truth. There is no evidence that this is anything but destructive. But that is the key. Its sole purpose is to tear down the Western way of life. That is not hyperbole. That is what the creators designed it for. When they came to America from a meeting in France, they said, you realize what we're about to unleash. We're about to release a plague on this society. We're all born with a brain, and we have an innate sense of self and identity and free will, and it is capable of reason. It's not religious conservatives that are at odds with reason and science. Sometimes, yes. But definitely, and this is why you're seeing professors now leave the universities who are on the left, because they realize, wait a minute, you're asking me to talk about these genders based on what? We cannot have blind faith. The horrors of the past happened because people were angry, afraid, and they felt that their identity had been taken from them. The greatest generation has just passed. There's very few of them left anymore. We all sat at the dinner table as kids, if you're my age, and we heard them tell the stories over and over again. If we are indeed sincere in our goal of never again, we will remember what those stories taught us. Men go crazy when they're afraid, when they're angry, when they're outraged. They go crazy. And they will listen to anyone who will say, I can bring order. I started reading a book last night. I'll tell you about it in a few weeks when I'm done. But I started reading it last night and I thought, this is a love letter to communism. And this is a very popular book. And it's talking about the future and what the future holds and the things that we have to do. And it is basically saying, you know, Communism really, you know, it had a lot going for it because it had heart, and we need to have heart now. We're in a different world. And until we recognize that and we don't play into those temptations of just reacting, we're not going to solve anything. And in fact, we will be a tool in the hands of the left. You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Glenn Beck is coming live to talk about the right path forward and to make fun of the people standing in the way. He might not be able to save the country, but at least we can all go down laughing. Glenn Beck Live, the Addicted to Outrage Tour, on tour this fall.
Saturday, I did a podcast, and I spoke of something that I had not spoken of before. And let me just start with saying this. Social media and media, please leave my family alone. The only reason why I am discussing this is I have been told by several authorities that this would be helpful to other people. So please leave my family alone. Something happened over the summer. I took a vacation in July. Because something had happened, and my family and I, we needed to go away together for a while. And what had happened was my wife woke me up about 12:20 in the morning. And she said, honey, the phone just rang, half a ring, and then it stopped. And I wanted to say, thank you for the update. Now back to sleep. And I said, what? And she said, somebody picked it up. Now, there are a string of things that have happened here that I want to point out along the way, because we were saved by a few things. One, we have a phone in our house that has two or three lines. And it shows you know, the incoming call has caller ID, has the incoming call, and then it also has a line on it, lights up. If somebody picks it up, it lights up. And I sat up in bed and I said, what do you mean somebody picked it up? And she said, somebody picked it up. And I went up into the kids' room and they're both sound asleep. And this is one of the nights where we didn't have somebody on duty in the what's called the command center in our house. We have a guard shack at our house, and we have monitoring, and there is someone monitoring our house visually and audio 24/7. My family has been under attack. We have had problems in the past, so I take it very seriously. I said, is anybody on duty? And she said, no. And I said, well, okay, let's not panic. And so we sat there and we talked for a few minutes, and we looked at the caller ID, and I won't tell you where it's from, but it was from out of state. And I said, we don't know anybody. That's maybe it was a wrong number. She said, I swear to you, somebody picked it up. Then I said, after about 20 minutes of discussing this, I said, let me get the gun and the dogs. So I'm thinking that somebody is outside in the guard shack or something and maybe picked up the phone in there and is communicating with somebody. So I get the gun and the dogs, and phone rings again, and it picks up immediately. And this time the light's on for a while. Sorry, the phone does not ring. The light just goes on. And somebody is making a call in my house, and we watch it for a while, and it's going for 3-4 minutes. So I get the dogs and I give them the command to search and kill. And I have them both by a leash, and I have a gun. And I walk out of the bedroom and I walk into the living room, and we have a very long hallway in our house. And I was walking down that center hallway, and I'm at the living room, and I announce, if there is someone in the house, I have a gun and I have dogs. I and my family feel under threat, and I will shoot to kill. Please announce yourself. Nothing. I keep walking down the hall. I keep repeating it. I have a gun and I will shoot to kill. My family and I feel as though we're under attack. The dogs are all keyed up because they can feel the tension in the house. And we hear something. And I stop, and I'm about to let the dogs go. And I say, if there is someone in the house, or if it is one of the children, you need to identify yourself right now, because I will shoot to kill. I hear my son say, Dad, it's me. Were you on the phone? No. Were you on the phone? Why? Answer the question. Yes. Now, who is my son talking to? It's now 1:30 in the morning, I think. Who's my son talking to at 1:30 in the morning? And this is a West Coast call. My son is 13. He said, I was just talking about a game from one of the gamers that I play with on PlayStation. I said, what's the name? And it was the name on the caller ID. I said, how old is he? He's in his 30s. My son's 13. I said, are you out of your mind? First of all, you gave him our phone number. You identified yourself. You're playing with a stranger. All of those things break the rules of the house. And and he's like, it's nothing. And I said, he's in his 30s. You're 13. What does a 30-year-old have to? And he's like, it's nothing. And I said, let me ask you a question. If your sister, who's 11, was on the phone with a 30-year-old guy, would you be saying the same thing? No. Well, what the hell is wrong with you? I probably didn't handle it the right way, but I think I handled it the way any parent would at 2 o'clock in the morning. I said, we'll talk about this tomorrow. Go to bed. Took all the phones and unplugged every single phone in the house except the one at my bed. I waited until 5 o'clock in the morning to reach out to Tim Ballard from Operation Underground Railroad, because I've been down this road with him. I know how this happens. I know how kids are groomed and then taken by a predator. My house probably has $1 million worth of security in it. My house is and I'm not joking, my house, we found out, they actually refer to my house as the compound. The only reason why we found out is because we were calling them because somebody tripped an alarm and we had to tell them that it was off and the police were already on their way, and we heard dispatch give the address and they said, is that the compound? And she asked for my name, and then she radioed back, yep, it's the compound. So it's known for its castle-like qualities. We have all kinds of servers and everything else. I don't even know what it is. Racks of stuff to prevent people from coming in electronically in our house. And more importantly, we have rules in our house with our children knowing firsthand that there are people that want to hurt their dad or hurt the family. They have witnessed it. When we sat down and I made the agreement that he could play on PlayStation, that was the number one rule. No one is to ever know your name. No one is to ever know your phone number. No one is ever to know your address. No one, no one, no one, no one ever, period. We put the game in the living room where he was playing it the whole time. We could hear him the whole time. We could watch him the whole time. How in God's name did this happen? I reach out to Tim. I come into the studios and he calls me back just before a broadcast in June. And all I can think of is I need to be at my house. And I said, Tim, I already have security reaching out to the police. What else do we need to do? He guided us through some things and then said, let me talk to the police after they do an initial search, because I have security that can search people's names and phone numbers. I have the means to be able to do that. That's part of, you know, what my security detail does before you would come to visit. We need to know who you are. It's a horrible way to live. We find out about this guy, and it's not pretty. I do the show, and I leave, and I go home, And as I'm driving home, I call Tim and I said, because I'm going to be meeting the sex crimes division, police sex crimes division, children sex crimes division. And they are going to interview my son. And I am terrified about what the future holds, what has happened. And I am terrified of what they're going to find. What are they going to even say to me? What has happened? And I'm on the way home and I said, Tim, can you prepare me at all on what I'm going to face? And he said, the worst part is if your son is normal, he's going to defend the man. And he'll be very angry with you. And I said, I can't believe that. He said, Glenn, it's normal. If he's being groomed, that's exactly what's going to happen. I get home and I sit down and my son's not in the room. And I have the children's sex crimes officers in my living room. I don't think I can remember a time when my mouth was dry on the air. I beg for mercy for my family, from the media and the, social media. I am telling this story, because I have been told by telling it, it will actually help others. But it is one of the most difficult, and frightening things I have ever gone through in my life. My son is on the phone with someone in the middle of the night, and he is in his 30s, and my son is 13, and they're just, Dad, we're just talking about games. Uh-huh. And what kind of 30-year-old man do you tell, call me and I'll pick it up, you know, after midnight, you know, on half a ring, and then I have to call you right back. Anyway. So I walk into the house, and just before I do, Tim says to me, your son is going to turn against you and he's going to defend this guy. The police officers ask if they can spend a few minutes with just Tanya and I know what they're going to ask because I had just been told what happens next, and that is they're going to ask for the PlayStation. They will ask for the PlayStation or the Xbox or whatever it is that you're using, because they have information that they'll need to get off of that, including every conversation that he has ever had online. And I said, well, I don't think he saves any of it. And Tim said, that's not a problem. So the police ask if I would give them permission to take it and to transcribe every word that has ever been uttered online. Now, put yourself in this situation for a second. Forget about what you're afraid of, the sex crimes division is afraid of and you are afraid of. I now have months of every conversation my son has ever had coming my way in a transcript. I don't want to see that. I don't want to know. I have to know. I don't want to know. Yes, you have my permission. You can, we didn't have to do anything. He said, no, there's, you wouldn't believe the information this holds. This holds not only all of the conversations, but also the information on everyone that he has connected with in any way, shape, or form. And it allows them to go into their networks and be able to see who they are connecting with. It is an unbelievable source of information that none of us know we have sitting in our homes. In this particular case, I was happy about it. I am just like everyone else who thought, well, it'll never happen to me. Because of my security, because of our family situation, it didn't happen to me, but it almost did. My son is sitting in the living room. The child sex crimes unit is in my living room. My wife and I are sitting there. I truly believe if I hadn't have been there, my wife would have gone and killed this man. We sit down with a police officer, and he asks, you know, what was going on, who initiated the call, you know, what do you guys talk about? And my son defends him and says, my mom and dad, they're paranoid. And they always think that somebody's out to get us and everything else. And, you know, in my case, partly true, but partly because, yes, they are. And I was shocked at my son because he has witnessed it. And I thought my kids understood that because they've witnessed very frightening things that we've endured together. And I've said to Tanya as we lay in bed that night, I don't know what my childhood would be like if I grew up with this happening in my house. I mean, it would be awful. I thought my kids would get it, but obviously they didn't. To cut to the chase here, because we had a phone with dual lines that lit up so you could see if someone was on the phone, because my children did not have access to the computer, because they did not have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or anything else, because we were lucky enough, I would not have looked at that light. My wife did. Because we were lucky enough that my wife looked at that light. On the first attempt, he was caught. I'm not going to give you any details other than the authorities were aware of him. There were apparently 12 other children he was grooming. And that's all I can say. I want to tell you that your children are not going to believe you. That your children are going to say, oh, geez, my mom and dad, they're so paranoid. They live in the past. They don't, quote, they don't understand gamers. I mean, we like to talk about things. One of the officers that sat in my house said to my son, you know, we just caught a woman. Can't remember if she was in the 30s or 40s. She lives way up north in the country. And she abducted a 15-year-old boy. They had been playing games. and they had become friends, and he had called her on his phone. And they started to talk about games. And then she said, hey, I'm happen to be in town. You want to have lunch? Can I meet you someplace for lunch? She then convinced him somehow or another to get on a plane and go with her out of state. They did. They were at their house, at her house. When he disappeared, the parents went to the police and they said he probably just ran away. And they're like, no, he didn't run away. It's not like him. Something's wrong. Police said, well, there's a time limit. We can't do this. There's nothing to go on here. Because they had a friend who was a cop that said, did he play games? Yes. They took the, I don't know if it was an Xbox or PlayStation, did exactly the same thing. And the police went online as their son. When he went online, apparently the abductor noticed that somebody had gone online. The boy said, oh, it's probably my parents. My parents never play a game. The abductor knew that's not your parents. The Xbox or the PlayStation has unbelievable power and information in it. My son's Xbox was used under his name throughout the summer by the police to try to catch people. You don't have any idea what's going on. That is a sewer of people waiting, knowing that parents do not pay attention and knowing that kids think that we're all gamers and so we're all cool. When the woman up in Minnesota saw that someone was going online as the boy, they had already had a couple of sessions of sex. She got him on a plane and was going to bring him back to Dallas. Unfortunately for her, the police were waiting at the airport. That kid was lucky. My kid was a miracle. Parents, please do not let your kids have social media. They can grow up later. Do not let your kids have social media. I know you're going to take all kinds of heat. I know you're, but they have it in this. Well, they're not living there, are they? I'm not their parent. I'm your parent. If this can happen in my house with my security, my connections, my children knowing that there's a reason to fear those online, what chance do you have? I found it remarkable that my family would be targeted when we have done so much to stop this very thing and rescue the kids. But it is one reason why I've decided to tell you this story. Because I don't, it happens for a reason. Everything happens for a reason. And if this can make you more aware, if you will talk to your child, get the game console into the kitchen or the living room where someone already is, which we had. Make sure they don't have access to a phone. Make sure that you check their histories, their deleted histories. Don't let them have social media, period. I know they're going to think you're a monster. But what's the worst that can happen? They have a few years with an uber strict parent? What's the worst that can happen if you don't do those things? I had a happy ending. You do not want to live through the weeks that we lived through, even with a happy ending. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Addicted to outrage.
Oh, man, did you see the U.S. Wimble? Do you see that?
Great tournament. The U.S. Open.
U.S. Open. Wimbledon.
U.S. Open.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was, I thought, despicable. Serena Williams' activity out on the court. I know nothing about, obviously, anything about sports. However, she looked so sincere when she was like, I am not a cheater. Well, it turns out, yeah, you are. Your coach admitted to it later.
Yeah. Should we listen to the audio of her sounding very sincere? This is Serena Williams fighting with the umpire.
I didn't get coaching. You need to make an announcement that I didn't get coaching. I don't cheat. I didn't get coaching. How can you say that? You owe me an apology.
They blame the ump?
Yeah. You owe me an apology. I have never cheated in my life.
Listen.
I have a daughter. And you owe me an apology. You will never do it. You will never, ever, ever be on another court of mine as long as you live. When are you going to give me my apology? You owe me an apology.
Okay, so here she is. Listen how sincere she is. She uses her child. I stand up for what is right for my child. If you hadn't have seen it yourself, you'd be like, you know what? She's probably right. I mean, she's using every bit of righteous, you know, indignation she can.
Yes. And here's the quote from the coach. I'm honest. I was coaching. She went on to say, I don't think she looked at me, so that's why she didn't think I was. Now, well, I don't know if that's true or not, but that also doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't make a difference.
You know, whether she sees him or not.
In a reasonable world, here's what should happen. She should now come out on television and say, I was wrong to say that to the umpire because apparently my coach was coaching. That's what the umpire saw. I did not see that. So my apologies to the umpire. No. I've had a conversation with my coach. It's outrageous. I don't cheat.
That's an okay ending to that story.
Yeah, it would be.
Right?
Would be.
It's not, of course, what happened.
No, it's not the ending.
What happened was Serena went to a post-game conference and talked about the umpire and his sexism.
You definitely can't go back in time, but I can't sit here and say I wouldn't say he's a thief because I thought he took a game from me. But I've seen other men call other umpires several things, and I'm here fighting for women's rights and for women's equality.
No, you're playing
tennis. And for all kinds of stuff. And for me to say thief and for him to take a game, it made me feel like it was a sexist remark. I mean, like, he's never took a game from a man because they said thief. For me, it blows my mind. But I'm going to continue to fight for women and to fight for us to have equal. Like, Courtney should be able to take her shirt off without getting a fine. Like, this is outrageous, you know? And I just feel like
this is a terrible argument.
The fact that I have to go through this is just an example for the next person that has emotions and that want to express themselves and they want to be a strong woman, and they're going to be allowed to do that because of today. Maybe it didn't work out for me, but it's going to work out for the next person.
What the hell do you think happened out there? You were playing tennis. By the way, getting your butt kicked at tennis. She's a great tennis player, one of probably the best ever. But she was going to lose this match either way. She's getting destroyed. Now, took all the attention away from Naomi Osaka, who won her first Grand Slam. It was a huge first Japanese woman, I think, to win a Grand Slam. Would have been a huge deal for her. Instead, it's all about Serena Williams and her victimization of sexism. This poor, you know, 100 millionaire has had so much sexism to deal with in her life.
Can I ask you a question? So he's a sexist, so he caused her to lose to another woman? How is that
right.
sexist?
Again, the point was taken away and it benefited another woman.
Right.
So right away, you know that.
It just sounds like redistribution of points to me.
And so, and, you know, her argument that, and this umpire has had confrontations with men before. He's kind of a little bit known to be
testy.
A little testy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like literally every single point she brings up has no basis. And yet she's being praised as this hero of women's rights. She's not out there playing tennis for women's rights. She's out there playing tennis because she's really freaking good at it and can make lots and lots of money doing it. Now, she may still, now she's playing for history because she's one of the best players of all time. But the idea that this turns into a sexism issue is exactly, Addiction to Outrage is a perfect summary of this story. Because people are looking to try to find these controversies. And, you know, she's trying to read into this guy's mind. He said absolutely nothing that would indicate sexism. Nothing.
All he did was... Well, he ruled against the woman.
Yeah, all he did was he saw coaching going on, which the coach admitted.
And the coach, of course, is a woman.
And gave her a warning. Then she started screaming at him, and he took a point, which is exactly what's supposed to happen by the rules. Then she continued the abuse, and he took a game, which is the next level of punishment by the rules.
Has it ever happened to anybody, John McEnroe?
Yeah, he has, yes, of course. I don't know what this guy is. I'm sure this
doing it at that point. No, it hasn't happened.
This has never happened before by someone calling him a thief. Oh, is that, that's
the
definition
the
of sexism? It's only if one specific word. I mean, of course, you can't sit there, and it wasn't just a thief. It was constantly berating this guy for, you know, multiple minutes, and every time you sat down, you'll never be on a court that I'm on again in my life. Like, what do you can't, that is not your decision, Serena. That is not your decision at all. And, you know, it's just hilarious that every single thing, I mean, Glenn, we talk about this all the time. Every single issue can be boiled down to racism or sexism to the left. To progressives, they will find it anywhere, whether you're saying, I want to lower taxes on businesses. That's because you want rich people. Rich people are more likely white. That's racism. You know, women own businesses at lower rates. That's why you want that. It's sexism. Every single issue, do you ever get bored with the same piece of analysis? Do you ever get bored blaming every problem on the same two things? You pointed this out in some of your tweets earlier today. People love that super easy explanation, this sort of like world all-encompassing equation that solves all their problems. Everything that is wrong with my life would be cured if everyone else wasn't such a racist. And I could sit here and blame everyone else for being a racist or a sexist for my entire life and give myself a get out of jail free card for every little issue that goes on in my life, because it's always somebody else's fault. It's always them being racist. It's always them being sexist. It's always them being some horrible thing that I can blame on them without evidence.
That's why it works.
And that's why it works.
Because it's easy to live your life that way. And if you think it's bad now, wait until the generation that had mommies and daddies at school bringing their attorneys over the grades and everything else. Wait until those kids get out of college, because they're starting this year.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.